G'day and welcome to a Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's a Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if your mates missed the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to Tabeb Dabeli, who is doing a PhD in Rehabilitation Science under the supervision of Dr. Beata Batarawicz. Welcome to Grad Chat, Tabeb.
Thank you so much, Colette, for having me here.
It's great to have you. And, you know, what was interesting, it wasn't that long ago, it was about a month ago, that Tabeb did her presentation, or a very short presentation, on the three-minute thesis competition, which is not easy, as I've said before, when I talk about the three-minute thesis. So how did you find that, prepping for 3 minutes, when you know normally that your research is going to probably take you about 80,000 words?
I didn't know what I was signing up to. That's for sure.
Are you saying that I tricked you?
I thought it was easier. But one thing that I learned is it's much more difficult to present for 3 minutes than for 3 hours. It took me hours and hours and hours of prepping and getting feedback from my fellows, friends, and other people, like people tell me what to improve, what things to do, and rehearse it, and hours of practice in front of my husband and my son, to the point where they are like, they are having some parts of the,
they know
the transcript.
If they didn't know before, they know now.
Yes. And I think people understand what I do in a short time. And for a person who is not in like medicine or health sciences, it made it easier. So I'm glad I took part in that competition actually.
That's good. Well, I hope I didn't trick you that much. But I'm always, it's interesting because I always feel that more of our students should be signing up straight away for this because it is a great skill to have. I mean, it's like an elevator pitch. It's a great skill to have. But yes, I do have to reach out from time to time saying, have you thought about this?
Yeah, I thought about for a year to take part in three-minute thesis. But now after I took the competition and I see all the preparation, I still believe like it's worth doing. And I encourage every student, especially before like going to the fields to collect the data, I want them to take part in this kind of competition so that it makes it so clear what they are doing and they will understand what they are talking about, not the rest of the people only.
Well, that's true, because it brings you back, doesn't it, to why you got into the research in the first place, because it's very easy to forget that after a couple of years. And I hear it from the students, saying, I don't know what I was doing. Well, why did you go into it in the first place? Because of this. Bring that passion back into your work and then you remember what you're doing.
Yeah, and sometimes grad school can be tiresome. So knowing why you are there in the first place, it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. It motivates you. And I see now, after the three-minute competition especially, I see how my research is going to look like.
Yes.
And I'm excited about that.
That's, see, my mission is accomplished.
Yes.
And it's the same actually with you coming on Grad Chat, which is awesome. Again, another opportunity to talk about your work. And I think what I've always been trying to say is that it's one thing talking about your work to people in your field, but it's very different talking to people about your work that aren't in your specific field, because you've got to get them excited too, although you've got a very important topic which we're going to get onto shortly. So would you agree with that in terms of, you know, these opportunities to just speak very naturally, I hope, about your work?
Yeah, I think in academics we are always like about publishing or presenting in conferences for a specific group of people, but actually we are doing the work for the community mm-hmm. who is not like in that field. So we need to be able to present our works to everyone.
Everyone
need to understand why we are here and what we are doing and how that benefits from our work. Like, I don't want our research to be in the shelves. It needs to be
out there.
Yes, out there. Most of the time we are trained to present in the school, in the seminars. So it's very uncomfortable for us to speak for the public. But like, this is one part of knowledge translation.
But with your, which I said, we're going to get onto your topic in a minute. That is a topic that needs to be heard mm-hmm. by the communities. And in this instance, in Ethiopia, where you're from.
Yeah.
Because otherwise things aren't going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you can't get through to the policy makers, etc., you need to get through to the people.
Yes.
Because it's affecting them.
Yes, I agree.
So that's going to be important moving forward. So tell us, why come to Canada to do your work?
I was looking for a place to study. Like, my topic is on maternal disability. So I was looking for schools that can provide rehabilitation science. Rehabilitation was something that I wanted to do
right.
for mothers. So when I see the opportunity, Queen's has a collaboration with the University of Gondar through
yes.
the MasterCard Foundation. So I used to work at the University of Gondar. So I was applying in different schools. And when I get that opportunity, I was like, yeah, this is something I have been looking for, because I want to study maternal health and disability and how we can overcome that, because my background is in midwifery and maternal in childbirth is a priority area for me. So it was like, yeah, this is something I have to learn.
So you moved the family over to Canada. And here you are.
Yes.
What is nice, though, is we do have a lot of MasterCard Foundation students from the University of Gondar. So it's not like you've got a little bit of a home here, because you've got other colleagues
yes.
that are doing similar, not similar work, but similar backgrounds. So that must help.
Yeah. And rehabilitation science is not well developed in Ethiopia, I would say. So like bringing what's here and taking back to home and helping people yeah. who otherwise wouldn't have this opportunity is, I think, very crucial for me and for my community as well. So
that's good.
That's very interesting.
Okay, so let's get on to your research topic, which is Beyond Repair, the process of social inclusion of women after obstetric fistula surgical repair in Ethiopia, the grounded theory.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about the fact that you've got some background in, your background is in midwifery.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you want to choose this particular area, mm-hmm. which is the obstetric fistula surgical repair?
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to look at that, and how prevalent is it in women in Ethiopia?
But can I tell you a little bit about obstetric fistula?
Yes, please do.
Yeah, obstetric fistula is a birth-related complication. So sometimes in Ethiopia, there are various delays that make women like birth at home or stay very long before getting medical treatment. For example, delay in seeking care. Women don't think like they need to go to the hospital to give birth or to the healthcare facilities. Only 50% of women are giving birth at the hospital or at the healthcare facilities.
Okay.
And the rest 50% are still giving birth at home due to lack of like delays in seeking care. Then there are some who have delays in reaching care. There is no, sometimes they don't have transportation access. So they will be delayed to reach to care, even if they decided to go.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there is delays in receiving care after reaching to the hospital due to various reasons. So these three delays make women go through a very difficult and prolonged labor. Sometimes women lasts for 3 to 5 days before giving birth.
Oh my God, that's a long time.
Yes, and due to the prolonged pressure of the baby on the maternal, various organs of the mother, like the bladder, the vagina, the rectum, due to prolonged pressure from the baby, there will be like days of maternal cell because it lacks blood flow to that area. And there will be like days of the tissue. So two organs would be connected. Like there will be a hole between, like, for example, the vagina and the bladder, or sometimes the vagina and the rectum, or both.
Right.
And woman would be leaking urine, feces, and gas through the same road. So it's a very, very stigmatizing condition.
Well, I can imagine, yes.
Yeah.
It's bad enough with menstruation, let alone that as well.
Yeah, so everywhere they are going, they are continuously leaking urine. So as a result, I have seen some...
So it's like an incontinence problem.
Yeah, it's like, it's not only an Ethiopian condition, but in low and middle income countries.
Yes.
It's estimated like 2 to 3 million women are living with obstetric fistula.
Is that right?
Yes. And for your information, obstetric fistula was a problem in the developed world like over a century ago. But it was eradicated now because of like the advancement in technology and the media, everything. Women are not giving birth.
And more women are having their babies in the hospital, like you said, where you can get quicker treatment.
Yes, or with a skilled attendant at birth. So the problem with the Ethiopian context is if the women are giving birth at home, they don't have a midwife. Like they will be giving birth through traditional birth attendants or their neighbors or their family members.
Right.
So when this obstructed labor or this difficult labor come, women would not be able to get like quick access.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So that's what led me to work. This condition is very stigmatizing and it's very disabling. Like it limits participation, it limits interaction with the community. So I want to see like, okay, we do surgeries for this woman, even for the surgery, because women are outcasted, they don't have the information even to get the surgery. And when I say the prevalence is 2 to 3 million, it's only the known cause. There it could be much more than this, because nobody wants to talk like my wife or my daughter has fistula, because people associate it with various things such as, okay, some people think it's a curse. It's all over the literature. Some people think like, oh, she must have sinned. That's why she like experienced this kind of birth injury.
Right.
Or there is bad smell that they don't want to expose that to. So the vast majority might not be known, and they are in the community and there is no surveillance mechanisms. So I am sure the prevalence is much more higher.
Right.
In Ethiopia, it's estimated that 0.6% of births end up with obstetric fistula in 0.6%. So when we think about 0.6, we might say like, it's a lot, but the effect it has on women, and considering how preventable it is, no mother should go through like complications like this, disabling complications like this in the process of bringing in life. Yeah,
exactly. Clearly then, well, there's the issue of what happens at childbirth, which causing this obstetric fistula. Then the second part, of course, they're not getting the surgery necessary to correct it.
Yeah, because once they come to the health facilities, there are specialized health facilities that provide fistula surgery, and the service is free of charge for women. They don't pay anything if they come. The problem is they don't have the information.
They don't have the information.
Whether or not this could be improved, and women are so ashamed to talk like, okay, I am leaking urine, or I am passing gas after birth. And what does that mean? Even in the normal group circle,
yes,
they prefer not to talk about it. So many people hide their condition. So even if the surgery is free of charge, and the condition usually occurs in the most rural and the most disadvantageous areas, right? Mm-hmm. So the health facilities are in the cities where women don't have access to reach out to those facilities. So had they know about the service, or had they had the means to come to the area, the service is free, the right. surgery. But most don't have the means to know about.
So even though this isn't part of your study, it mm-hmm. seems to me the first part is, as you said, is getting the message out there saying this can be corrected.
Yeah.
And it's free mm-hmm. to get that correction. Mm-hmm. Then again, of course, those in your rural communities would find it harder to actually come in. But the first thing is to say this can be corrected.
Mm-hmm. In Ethiopia, the first fistula facility was established by Dr. Hamlin Kathleen. She came to Ethiopia. She saw this woman suffering, and she said, like, with her husband, okay, I am going to build an institution that provides the surgery yes. for this woman. And she lived there her entire life. And she, like, that Hamlin Fistula Center served more than 70,000 surgeries.
Wow.
And a lot of women have got the surgeries, but still, how many more are still at home?
Still at home.
Yeah.
So if they do get the surgery, I mean, there's that pre, and then there's the post where there's still a bit of stigma, etc. So how are the social inclusion and participation experience of women post obstetric fistula surgical correction? So what's happening after? I mean, if you can get them to have the surgery, surely that should lift the stigma that they had, or doesn't it?
So that's my study topic. Most of the women are stigmatized and isolated. Sometimes they are left alone in a small house, far from their families. They are abandoned by their husbands most of the time.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, most of them are divorced. Most of them lost their child during that labor because of, like, when the mother is experiencing prolonged pressure, so it's the baby. So
right.
most of them lose their babies, and sometimes they lose their ability to conceive a child. All these factors, pre-surgery, okay, there is a bad smell, the unpleasant smell, then there is the leakage of urine, obviously,
yes.
or feces, or gas, whatever. And then there is the attitude of the community about the cause of the fistula. All these things make them, like, stigmatized from their community.
From the community.
Okay, surgery, we are fixing the problem. We are stopping the leakage. But are we fixing her other aspects?
So when she goes back to the community.
Yeah, she needs to go.
Do people go, oh, you're okay now?
Maybe she might not be.
She may not be accepted back into the community.
Accepted, or because she have lost lots of her statuses. She was married before. In Ethiopia, being married is, we are cultural, traditional society. So women need to have, like,
lots of children.
Yeah, lots of children with a husband. And not having that status will make you, in a way, like, less
womanly.
Less womanly, I would say. So, yeah.
Can I ask a quick question, though? If they have this corrective surgery, mm-hmm. can they still have more children, or sometimes not?
Sometimes, yes, but sometimes not.
Are you looking at those after the corrective surgery can still have children, and how they're perceived back in the community versus those who had corrective surgery but can't have children anymore, and how they are perceived? Because it would seem those that can still have kids, maybe they've got a better chance of being back in the community as opposed to those that can't.
Actually, that's not the only issue. Having a child is not the only issue. Most of the women are economically dependent on their husbands as well.
Right.
So when they are abandoned, they don't have the economic means to survive.
Right.
They don't have a child. They don't have their husbands. They don't have the economic means. They are mostly, like, young women who don't have, like, the necessary education
right.
to go on with life. So how do you start? Like,
yes.
how do you live? Are you going to be a homeless person on the street?
Right.
So all these things, it's a multifaceted
yes.
problem. Like, mm-hmm. it's not only reproduction. There is the social isolation. There is the economic burden. There is the loss of a child.
Right.
So all these things, when we fix the surgery, we are fixing the leakage. But what about everything
else? What about the rest of it?
Yeah.
So currently then, what formal and informal supports are available for women after obstetric fistula surgical correction? And how do these services contribute to the social inclusion and participation of women? Because that's ultimately what we're trying to do.
Yes.
Correct it, but also allow them to be accepted back into the community to have a purpose.
So my study has three objectives. Mm-hmm. One is to look at the social inclusion and participation experiences of women. For that, I interviewed 21 women and saw their experience. So in that group, we have women who had corrective surgeries, who are cured. There are women who have corrective surgeries, but who are not able to be cured. So there are a small section of the women who will never be cured. And sometimes diversion surgery is done to make the bodily fluids go through a different route, like colostomy bag.
Oh, okay. Bad. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And sometimes some women don't get this kind of surgery even.
Right.
So, and there are some women whose husband was there for them to support and who conceived a child at the time of the interviews. There are some women whose husband was there, but who are not able to conceive anymore. So I have all the varieties, and I was asking them, how are you feeling? So from their experience, I see that most of them, especially the cured ones, the uncured one is another problem. Mm-hmm. But for the cured ones, they think like their life is better after the surgery. They are able to move around. But most of them mentioned like the issue of reproductive health issues, for example, sexual dysfunction. Because of the scar, when we are fixing the surgery, we are creating a scar, right? Even if their husband is there, they cannot fulfill the sexual desire of themselves or in their husband. So that's making a rough and turbulent marriage for them.
Yes.
Then there is issue of infertility as a result, due to the scars, due to the pain, or because they lack their uterus. So they cannot conceive a child. So they have these issues, and they were like, I want to get services to improve these things. Like, how do I manage my pain? How do I manage my fear of, because this problem come due to the reproductive process, like in the process of giving birth. They need to have sexual intercourse to conceive, right? When they think about that, they are always associating this issue with the trauma. So they cannot be themselves again.
Right.
Then they have I used to have a husband. He used to do everything for me, but now I don't have a husband. I don't have a job. I don't have education. I don't know what to do with my life. So I am a beggar on the street. So this is their experience for some of them. And for some of them, they are it's corrected. My family's accepted me well. They supported me well. So I'm doing well. And I aspire to achieve some things. So we have all the varieties in my study.
It's interesting because clearly there are some communities and families that can accept, this is all part of life. We still want you in our family, which I find it difficult that people don't want someone in their family just because they have a physical disability in that sense. But everyone is different, right?
Yeah.
Even if you find out this and you're finding out these things are happening, what's that going to do? Particularly for those communities that don't accept these women back into their community. Are you hoping that you can open their eyes and say, a lot of this can be fixed? They may not be able to bring more children in, but there's still a role for this woman to play in supporting our community.
Yeah. And my second study is on the available formal and informal supports.
Right.
So I see it from the perspectives of family members and service providers, like healthcare professionals, psychiatrists, social workers. I was asking them, what supports are there for this woman to help them return back to their community, or for that matter, start a new life?
Yes. particularly if they don't have a husband anymore, they've yeah. been divorced. Yeah. What else can they do
yes,
to what, live a fruitful life?
Yes. And how do you support them mm-hmm. to have that fruitful life? And it's like it's being analyzed. I haven't yet mm-hmm. get the full results, but I see that there are some efforts to help this woman to get back to their previous self or to build a new identity for that, a new perception about life, to mm-hmm. go out of the trauma and to think about like how they can have a bright future. Yes. And there are like some supports, like economic supports and microfinancing for them to enable them start small businesses.
Right. Okay.
Yes. And that's very essential and that's very meaningful. But still, it's a very minor segment of the population who are getting this kind of support.
And like you said, the numbers are probably a lot higher than what you've told us in the beginning.
Of course.
Because even... particularly in some of the more rural communities mm-hmm. that maybe not have a lot of contact with the big cities and things like that.
Yeah. And for the families, most of the women said, like, I don't have family members that supports me because I accept family members through women. They right. said, like, okay, I don't have family member you can talk to. This by itself tells me, like, okay, they are just left out.
Right.
But for those who were there, I was asking them, how do you support this woman? So based on their input, I can extrapolate the findings from these few families.
Yes.
And we can go back to the community and other families for the general community. And we can say, like, okay, obstetric fistula is happening not because of her fault or her sin or a curse. Yeah. She is just going through this because of the lack of medical access. And we need to be more supportive to enable this woman regain their identity and be productive member of the community, even if they cannot give child birth. Like, even if there are some of them still are leaking, but can they manage it?
Yes.
And from the formal support perspective, can we do more? Can we do more in meaningful work to enable them, like, regain their life back?
Is some of it, you mentioned, for instance, or those that don't have access to a hospital, there's still a lot of communities that don't have access, for instance, to a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving birth in the traditional ways, and that's been going on for thousands of years.
Yes.
But is it, and I know this is not your area, but if we can't build more hospitals closer to these communities, training more women to be midwives or men to be midwives to help, to me that's a solution in itself, along with the training or the programming or education,
mm-hmm.
that there are ways to correct this.
Yeah, the government is working towards increasing the number of hospitals, the number of health centers. Even we have like health posts that are very close to the woman rural area. Mm-hmm. So one woman is assigned as a health extension worker who registers every mother who gets pregnant, and they encourage them to the hospital. So it's not only the lack of the hospitals, but the attitude of the community about hospital birth. They want the comfort of their family members
right.
when they give birth. So we have to think about, okay, 50% of women are not coming to the hospital. So how do we make it like more home-like for them to come?
Right.
And prevent obstetric fistula is not the only problem women are facing. There is bleeding. There is asphyxia, like the child
mm-hmm.
gets asphyxiated. There is hypertensive disorders. So without proper medical attention, women keeps on dying. So our maternal mortality is 401 per 100,000 live births, mm-hmm. which is very high compared to other countries. There are countries with 3 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births. So it's a lot of number. And this number comes from the hospital registered maternal deaths.
Right.
So there are so many women dying in the house. So it's not a single entry point solution, but a coordinated effort. Like, how do we make midwives accessible to women so that they can give birth at home? Or how do we make the environment more accepting?
Right.
So that women can come home. Or how do we make paradigm shift and attitudinal change for the community about the importance of institutional delivery services.
Which is not easy changing a community culture.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the harder part, I would have thought, because if you can't get through that, then it's very difficult to get them to come to hospital and do the next thing. So what's your ultimate goal from this? Is it just more of an awareness that this is going on? Is it giving some potential solutions like you talked about, whether we can do some more education, where we can have more midwives, whether we can get more of them to come to the hospital if they know it's going to be difficult?
Yeah. So from my study, because my study focus is on post-surgery rehabilitation experiences, support services, I want to see how we can support this specific segment of people,
right,
who are cured or uncured. Okay, for the uncured, are we providing sanitary materials enough? Can we do that?
Right.
Are there organizations who can support this woman to get access to at least sanitary equipment?
Yes.
Are we organizing some sort of working environment for this woman who, without being stigmatized, even if they are still leaking?
Right.
Okay, for those who are cured, are we giving them enough rehabilitation supports like reproductive health services? I saw some women, like, sometimes their vagina would be closed because of the scars.
Right.
And we don't have like a surgeon who can perform. That's also part of my study. So right. We don't have the surgeon. Okay, can we train people to give holistic support for this woman just beyond treatment?
Right.
And how do we go forward to the community and tell them, like, to bring like attitudinal change and also awareness about obstetric fistula?
Yes.
Because prevention is way better than the cure or the treatment. So how do we do that?
To help reduce numbers in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Reducing the numbers first is the first priority.
This is a big project.
Yes.
And I know you're only sort of, I think you said you were interviewing like 21 families, when you know how many families have been affected by this, but really, really important. I still think it's the cultural part that's going to be your biggest barrier.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, we've got people like you to help sort of persuade people.
Yeah.
And giving true facts.
Yeah.
Which will help. So that's a big job.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this kind of problems should not occur in the 21st century.
But it does.
Yeah, but it does, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And there is a goal to eradicate obstetric fistula by 2030.
Set by the Ethiopian government or?
By the international? UNFPA and the Ethiopian government also endorsed that.
Right.
But considering everything else, like we have now conflicts. I have seen some women who tried to go to hospital, but due to the conflict,
they can't get there.
They couldn't get the service there, and they developed fistula. It's in my finding. So these kind of things are increasing the displacement,
right?
The violence in the country. All these things are not making things favorable for a woman.
Right, right.
So we have to think about all these things when we are thinking about eradicating obstetric fistula.
Yeah.
Are we really going to do that by 2030, like 6 years from now on, having all these issues?
6 years is not that long.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even if we are able to do that, are we making people productive afterwards? Are we making them to participate in a meaningful way?
I guess anything we do is better than doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe our end date is too early. But we've got to still keep progressing towards it.
Yeah.
Which is going to be important.
Yeah. And we have like countries who did that, who eradicated obstetric fistula, especially as a result of prolonged labor.
Right.
We have like lots of countries doing that. So it's not impossible.
Right.
But
it's finding something that works for Ethiopia.
Yes.
Because every country has different set up something. Mm-hmm. So each country has to do it slightly, learn from the others.
Yeah.
But what might work for them may not work for you. So what part can we take?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But finding the information in the first place is the important bit, which is what your work you're doing. So really happy you're doing that. Now, before we end, I want to ask you a little bit about the fact that you're a board member on the for the Banree Centre, which for those of you aren't aware, is a special place on campus for mature women who have come back to do their studies and things. And it's again, it's a lovely little, in my opinion, a lovely safe space for women to meet and chat and get supports and things. What made you want to be a board member?
I have been using services from the Banree Centre since I came here.
Right.
I consider it a place where you feel home.
Yes.
Starting from the setup and the people, everybody is so accepting and so supportive. You can discuss anything and everything with them regarding your family life. If you are stressed about it, like, they are open to hear. If you have difficulties in your studies, they are there to support you. There are other women from all over the world who are sharing, mature students, mm-hmm. who are sharing the same struggle in the same opportunities. So learning from them, I was like, I want to contribute here.
Right.
Yeah. So like, it's a meaningful work. I think yes. the Banree Centre is making a meaningful work for women. And because of that, because I believe in the essence and what they are doing. Okay, we might say like, we are serving a small community, but we are making a huge and significant difference in their children, in the women. We are helping them to succeed in their academics. That's yes. what we are here for. So serving in this board means like supporting women like myself.
Yes.
I am a service user, but at the same time, I provide the service.
You provide it.
Yeah.
Which is terrific. And that's the whole thing about the Banree Centre. I mean, I love it. Like you said, there's so many supports, but it's not just the staff there. It's women helping women.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely area to be. You know, a lot of it, the funding to support it is by donations and things. So, you know, I know they do their fundraising drives, which is really important that we can help contribute to that to yeah. keep a place like the Banree Centre open, because it does have such a crucial part to play for our mature women on campus.
Yeah, the small things matter. The lunch soup, yes. the chat, the place to sleep.
It's a safe space.
Yeah, a breastfeeding area for a woman. Yeah. These are very, very meaningful. So yes. without supporting such environments, we cannot help women achieve what they
right.
can achieve. Because, like, women are not incapable of achieving, but some
sometimes
aspects of life.
Sometimes they just need a little bit of extra
yeah,
help.
Yeah, extra help.
Particularly if you've got kids.
Yeah.
You know, you can't always afford babysitting duties and things, right?
Yeah.
There... I know, sometimes I've gone in there and there's quite a few babies. And...
Yeah. there are women.
Mum and baby are having a sleep in one of the rooms.
Yeah. There are students who come with their children to the class, and supporting this woman is, I think, very satisfactory and yeah. very rewarding service.
Well, thank you for being contributing to the success of the Banree Centre.
I encourage everyone to donate to the Banree Centre, because they are doing an amazing job supporting women
yeah.
in academics.
Couldn't have said it any better. So, Tabeb, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been great to have you and learning so much about your, you know, some of the things that go on in your homeland. I really appreciate you telling us about that part of it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here.
That's great. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcast. Just type in a Grad Chat. Until next week, this is CJ the DJ signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.